Hello and welcome to edition 283 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula 1. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. And we are back. It's been a while since our last podcast, so please accept our apologies. But with all the easing of COVID restrictions here in the UK, as you can appreciate, it's been a very busy time for all of our podders with work and everything else. So we're just glad to be here to bring you the latest and what is going to be our mid-season review. And what better way to catch up with all Formula 1 than with a mid-season review? I am Richard Baxter. With me tonight, we have Norfolk's next top Formula 1 engineer, Callum's brother. It's Dan Springall.
Hello, good evening. And yeah, hello to all of our lovely listeners. Thank you for tuning in.
Absolutely. Also joining us, Michael wrote the script originally and I copied the text. Fellow NRF1 pod, joint NRF1 podcast founder Perry Hamilton. Got there in the end.
Please don't edit any of that out, Rich. Please can we keep the fumbles in? Hello, Rich. It's good to be back. It's good to be here. It's good to be talking Formula One again. It's been a while. It's been a number of weeks since I was last on, and good to be on with you as well, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, I was literally just thinking about this. I think it's been at least 2, maybe 3 years. I think I was still at university the last time I was actually in the same room as you. Mm. And that was even when Michael was doing it as well. So, yeah, it's been a while.
And we're still technically not even in the same room.
No, exactly.
We're still onlining it.
Yeah.
We are onlining it for today just because it's easy and it's simple whilst we're all busy. But you guys have been good, I trust. Keeping well.
Yeah. I mean, I've obviously started my new job, so in the process of settling in.
Go on, tell us all about your job, Dan. I think you teased it in a previous podcast, but...
Yeah, so I have now moved to work in Formula E, Formula One's sort of electric sister. And so, yeah, I mean, people will have their own opinions on Formula E, but I've been a fan for a number of years, particularly in the last sort of 2-3 years. And yeah, it's not a top team, let's say that, but certainly one that I can put my own stamp on things. And yeah, so, you know, starting to learn everyone's sort of foibles, I guess you could say, how people tick, and see what I can bring to the table. And yeah, so it's a nice challenge, so certainly something new. And at this point I could become a world champion next year, but we'll have to see.
Well, there you go. Let's hope we could have an NRF1 Podder world champion. I mean, we've already got a Beckles karting champion on our ranks, so
two-time
got to remember. Well, the
give him that respect. Give him his name.
Yeah, but
I don't think I ever asked. I don't ever ask Kyle whether they were like back to back. Were they consecutives?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Or were they separate? We'll have to ask him. Let's get him on and ask.
Basically, he's the Norfolk Mika Hakkinen right there. So,
that's it. Absolute hero. Dan, I have a question about Formula E.
Go on then.
You put something up in our group chat about going and voting, and I went and voted.
Thank you.
And voted for both the guys. No, that's fine. So. But tell me what that actually does, because if my understanding is, it's like a computer game where if you get the most votes, you get to have like a boost that nobody else gets. Is that right?
Yeah. So basically, if you get if you're in the top five of drivers voted by the fans, then you effectively get an extra power boost with also some free energy, so that you get the power boost for free. And you can use that at any point in the second half of the race to make an overtake or to defend. And the other thing that is very important about fan boost is, on average, could score you another 2 points potentially, depending on obviously where you are. But it's on average another 2 points, which is very valuable considering that, if anyone likes Formula E that is listening and hasn't seen the result from the weekend yet, fast forward. It was very close for the championship, and Mercedes only just won it by a very small handful of points. And even Mercedes down to ninth place was covered by 60 points, which is very small over an entire season's worth of racing. And even the Drivers' Championship was maybe 7 points, I think, off the top of my head. So, and there were even 14 drivers going into last weekend that could have potentially won it.
That's crazy.
Fan boost is very important. And
does this happen at every race?
Yes. Yes, every single race there is a fan boost vote. And then, as I mentioned, top five drivers get a free power boost.
Dan, are you allowed to... Are you allowed to tell us what team you work for so that we could then like tweet out in the future when this fan boost thing needs to be done and we can get our NRF1 listeners to take on the challenge and get you as much fan boosting as possible?
I'm not entirely sure whether I should be saying whether I work for. So we'll leave it on the side for now. I'll post out some details if and when it's appropriate.
I like that. So if in the future, like, basically the rule is, if we're allowed, we'll only ever retweet fan posting for your team.
Yes, please.
If you're not allowed, then we won't post fan boosting about anything to do with Formula E at all. Because then if we did then post it, people would be like, oh, that must be the team. It's you or it's nothing, Dan, but we won't do anything until you tell us it's okay.
That's fine. I will have a chat. But because obviously it's all still very new, I'm kind of putting out the feelers at the moment. So I thought,
of course, mate. And obviously, you're the priority, mate. Not the tweets. Like, let's be clear about that.
I thought I'd share it privately, and then when the time's right, then we can get the entire NRF1 fan base to get behind the might of our team.
Harness that power, my friend.
We'll do it. Now that there is further Formula E content to come a little later on, actually.
Exciting, Rich.
Potential. It is. It's later on the podcast. Okay. But
if that's not a hook to keep you listening, I don't know what is. Rich with the tease.
But we'll crack on and start our review now. And I have to say, the season so far, I want to know what you guys think of it. But there has been more twists and turns than Monaco this season.
It's certainly been one of the most dynamic years, hasn't it? For a while now.
It has. Now, I know, Paige, you're not the biggest fan of Monaco, but that was the most twisty circuit that I could think of, so that's what I wrote down.
Fair enough.
I couldn't say more twists than turns than Austria, which has like seven corners, so...
Would also have accepted Suzuka because it is effectively a figure eight track.
Oh, no, that's true, actually.
Okay. But redoing it, there's been more twists and turns than Suzuka this season.
Rich, I love how you pandered to me. It's so not necessary. They are playing a blinder right now, aren't they? They really, really are. And there's that awkward moment of all of this hoo-ha and what have you that's been made. Yeah, I said hoo-ha about it's not exciting, teams can't follow, we need to do something to do. And so they change the regulations and they get everyone to invest in new designs, new cars and all of that stuff and understanding how the new rule book's going to work. And then the last season before they roll the regulations in, it's one of the closest, most exciting seasons we've had in ages. Mm. And between two teams as well. Like, that's remarkable. Not just, it's close between two teammates, like the Rosberg and Hamilton, when Rosberg won it. But it's close between different teams. And you've even got really, really strong battles in the midfield that's like leaking onto the podium. Mm. And it's remarkable. It's been one of the most exciting seasons in recent memory.
Yeah, definitely. And you have to say that the season started very calm. It was all very gentlemanly. We're racing each other. It's going to be great. And now the heat is on, and this is turning into a big rivalry.
Yeah, the gloves soon came off, didn't they?
Certainly
got very handbags very quickly. It was very shooting stars, wasn't it? But especially at Silverstone. And... That's a bit of British 90s comedy for...
Oh, yeah, bring it, mate. I'm very aware.
for anyone not clued up. So, this was kind of what we had anticipated that Hamilton and Vettel was going to be years ago now, and it just never materialised, did it? So, I mean, it's nice that we've now gotten to the point where it is very eye for eye, isn't it? Very much thirsty, bloodthirsty rivalry. It's all kind of being played out in the media, not just on track, but just kind of, I guess, gives us that extra juicy factor, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you have to say, not just on track and not just the media, but also following the collision at Silverstone, which everyone saw, we know what happened, so we don't need to like go into too much detail, I don't think. But the talk from the team bosses, now, I've not heard people talk that way in a long, long time.
Well, I mean, from my point of view, Christian Horner and a few of the others from the Red Bull camp have made themselves look rather silly in the wake of Silverstone.
Why do you say that, Dan? Do you think that that's because they've gone over the top in their response, or absolutely. Were they claiming something that's later been proven untrue? When you say silly, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, for a start, well, let's try and put aside the differences on the debate as to whether Hamilton had the right to have the corner or not.
Yeah, sure.
And for me, Red Bull kind of just went hell for leather on it, didn't they? They were just kind of like, oh, we are steadfast in our opinion that Max had every right to own that corner and Hamilton should have got a greater penalty. Regardless of what I think of the incident, for me, they were perhaps a little bit too aggressive on that kind of call to the stewards, but and it kind had very much a kind of football vibe to it of, oh, ref, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Rather than the sort of more gentlemanly rugby style attitude to the referee. I didn't like that. It was a bit too handbags for me.
I have to have a couple of things to say on that. One, I like the football analogy. Me, I was going to go more, it felt very much like Trump refusing to acknowledge he'd lost the election. Just make enough noise and be as loud as you can and see how many people believe you and see if you can make people doubt what they're seeing.
Yeah, it was very sensationalist, wasn't it?
Hugely, which I thought was really interesting. And so here's my question, and you might be able to shed a bit of light on this, Dan, and if you can't, no worries, but do you think team principals have always spoken to the stewards, the race director, or what have you, in such a forceful way? Or do you think, A, it's a change because it's no longer Charlie Whiting, or B, do you think it's a change because they know that those messages are now being broadcast? Because I remember it hasn't been going on that long that we've been able to hear the team principals talking to the race director and the race stewards. And I remember we talked about it on the pod, I think, previously, about how good it was that we managed to get that broadcast. It was quite insightful. So is it a new thing that they can have that communication directly? If it isn't, have they always talked about it that way? Or do you just think that they're talking that way because they know they're being heard on a public stage? That was a long
indicator. So I guess, first of all, that channel has always been open. Even when Charlie was in charge, that channel was there. And I believe was regularly used, but obviously we never heard that. And it was only just recently, wasn't it? I think it was only this year that we only got access to that as the casual.
And not even from the first race.
No, exactly. I think it was Barcelona, off the top of my head, that we first got access to that. It might even have been earlier. I'm sure one of the listeners might know. I'm sure my brother would know. That has always been there. As for the attitude towards it, I don't know. You could have grounds to say that it has always been that same, attitude, regardless of who was in charge. But it's my belief that Michael Massey being there now, as opposed to Charlie Whiting, has, I guess, throttled the idea that it is, you know, very sensationalist again, and very sort of lobbying attitude towards the stewards. I think Charlie probably just had that respect of the teams that perhaps they would ask the question for the sake of asking it, but wouldn't perhaps question the answer in the first place. So Difficult to say, because I only have about as much information as everyone else at this point, I'm afraid. But from my opinion, I don't see any reason why it was different in the past, as to the fact that the channel was open.
Okay, thank you.
Definitely added to the entertainment, though.
Absolutely.
For spectators, hearing exactly what was going on and hearing all the kind of gossip in the background, and I'm sending you an email, Michael, all that stuff.
Yeah, don't check my emails during the race.
it's staring at like 8 different screens already. I'm sure you can stare at one more, it's fine. but of course, not only was Silverstone a big moment, but we have to talk about the last race in Hungary as well, in Turn 1 there. The chaos of Turn 1, we had rain just before the race starts, which we always know makes for an exciting race, and then of course we have cars that don't get away well, cars that do, we have a wet track, people missing their braking points. We don't need to say much else, but you know, turn one accidents like that do happen. And next up we're going to Spa, which we know has history of turn one accidents. Or I should say incidents, because as we all know from the film Hot Fuzz, accident, what's the word? It means there's no one.
No fault.
Yeah, there's no fault. So there you go. I forgot the quote then.
That's all right, Rich. We weren't holding a picture. We got what you meant. It's exactly that. Yeah, I don't think turn ones have been this compelling in years. They're always the most exciting part of a race, like the start and getting down there. But I mean, I'd never seen anything like the start in Hungary, the restart, sorry, or whatever it was. I'd never seen anything like that, where there was one car on the grid. It's insane. I don't think we'll see anything like it again for a very, very long time, if ever. But the fact is, you've seen more and more and more this season that people are potentially going a little bit harder. They're going a little bit edgier and they're giving up a little less. And I don't know whether that's because, you know, somebody's proven that a god can bleed and that, you know, they've managed to nick the cheek of Mercedes and Lewis, and they've been leading for most of the season up until the last race. And that, so other teams are looking and going, Christ, maybe they're not invincible. You know, maybe there is a small little gap in that armour that we can get through. We just need to get our elbows out a bit, like Max and Red Bull have been doing. So it's can't miss stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, the point you make there about, you know, the turn ones being so exciting for the first time in a long time. When I think back to the kind of 90s where you had kind of Hakkinen and Schumacher going side by side, and you have obviously like Coulthard and Irvine in the mix. That was the era I grew up. I properly started watching, so that's what I really remember that stands out. And every now and again you'd have this other team. We're kind of getting to that stage where you're expecting to have two Mercedes and two Red Bulls there, but also you're looking over their shoulder because you've got a Ferrari, you've got a McLaren who can start fast and come through. And it's really become interesting. And I think the biggest thing that we've seen from kind of the almost fallout between Verstappen and Hamilton and the way the rivalry has changed is that turn one now, neither of them is going to give any quarter. The second half of this season is going to be something, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you could probably even say beyond turn one. If they get anywhere near as close as they have been, and Silverstone was an example of that.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, it is going to, at some point, it will boil over, but it is very much elbows out, as you said earlier. Maybe it's because people know their cards better, because obviously these are not a direct carryover, but mostly a carryover from last year. So the systems would probably be relatively similar. Behaviour of the car would be relatively similar as well. So perhaps people are just more people are just on top, and because you know, you've got people like we saw over the weekend in Hungary, we've got Alpine and Aston Martin are occasionally fighting. We've even had. AlphaTauri have been up there. Gasly's put in some really good performances this season as well. So, yeah, normally what you would see with the yearly cycle is obviously you have teams with more resource to go and get on top of their car earlier, but because we've had that carryover, I think what we're seeing is more people have had more time to get on top of the car that isn't a function of resource necessarily. Let's say for the exception of Haas, which is a bit of a joke, but because I think you could argue they're basically running a 2018 Ferrari, but yeah, I mean, we'll just have to see how the rest of the season goes. But I mean, coming back to the point about the number two drivers, for me, neither of them have turned up this year, really. Bottas is hopeless at best. And Perez, yeah, let's give him a bit of credit. He has won, and he has put in some good performances. But it's much of a muchness, really, just with a little bit more experience. Because, yeah, we had Albon and Gasly over the last couple of seasons who, let's be honest, struggled. And even someone with Perez's well-known experience and capabilities, and let's be honest and fair to him, he is a bloody good driver. He is struggling. Even he is struggling against Max.
And that's where I think I'd give him the benefit of the doubt there, more than I would Bottas.
Yeah.
Because Bottas, as you say, he's got that carryover, he's got that consistency, he's comfortable in that car, and he's proven that he can put it on pole, he's proven that he can put it on second, and he's proven that he can win in that car. Checo still needs to prove that. He's still learning his new team, he's still learning, and you know, you would expect to give him a little bit of a grace period, but at the same time, it's that balance of, he's a super established, super experienced driver, you should be able to get in a car. And I mean, and you look at what someone like Alonso has been ringing out of that Alpine. You know, Alonso's been out of Formula One for a while, comes back in, he gets into a car he's not overly familiar with, and he's driving it quite well. Like, he's obviously not got the equipment under him.
At Silverstone was just next world, wasn't it?
Well, it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. Now, Alpine aren't the power that Red Bull are at the moment, but it's that definition of, come on, you're an experienced driver, you should be able to get in this car and make it work.
Yeah, I mean, even with technology now and general sort of sports psychology, sports physiology, you know, age is not a barrier, or at least not as much as it was, let's say, 20 years ago. Even at his age, which, let's be honest, isn't even that young at 40, or that old, sorry, pardon me. Sorry to our older listeners.
Sorry, 40-year-olds, you're just not that young in Dan's eyes.
I'm only 26 or 25. I can't remember how old I am. It's been a long week. Last week was a 7-day week for me. You'll have to excuse me. Age is not a barrier now, let's be honest. Alonso with his talent, he should be able to turn up and wring the neck of that thing. And he has done. I mean, he did need a few races to get going, but yeah, let's say he's firing on all cylinders now. I mean, he's back to the Alonso that we have known previously.
And let's be honest, that last race in Hungary, Alonso battling for, was it fifth place with Hamilton, wasn't it? Something like that. They were battling over. He won that race essentially for his teammate. Ocon obviously still had a lot to do because Vettel was right behind him. But with Alonso holding off Hamilton and fighting him as hard as he did and not giving an inch, that kind of old school racing that we've seen him do, that was top quality driving, and that just enabled Ocon to have that little bit more time at the end of the race to stop Hamilton, you know, charging through and catching on the fresher tyres. And I had a text message from my dad straight after the race, and he just said, "Good old fashioned racing." And I just thought, that's so true. It's not very often you see something like, you know, how many laps? It felt like probably nearly 10 laps or so that you know, Hamilton was just trying, couldn't do it, trying, couldn't do it. That's, you know, BBC a while ago were saying about, oh, is Alonso past it because he's not showing any quality in that car? They were watching that. They're going to be eating their words, because that was some of the best driving I think we'll see this season.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Yeah, I said in the group chat that, you know, this is shades of Imola 2005 and 2006, and we had virtually no overtaking in those two races. And yeah, in this case, we didn't need any overtaking for it to be thrilling. So yeah, with the new rule sets, let's say that should improve how closely you can follow, and yeah, that will improve the racing in theory. But yeah, this whole judging a race by the number of overtakes, I saw on social media over the weekend, IndyCar themselves were bragging about how many on-track passes there were during the race, but that doesn't necessarily correlate to entertainment.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
So yeah, the sooner the F1 bosses wake up to overtaking does not equal entertainment, then you know we might actually get more consistent good races. But
yeah,
because we have had a few races this year where it has not been great, but hidden behind the drama that has been Red Bull versus Mercedes consistently. So yeah, we'll take it with a pinch of salt, let's say.
Yeah, and we have to touch on the other things actually from Hungary as well, because there were some big moments there. First of all, Vettel finished second but was disqualified because they couldn't get the fuel out of his car, which I find really strange, because the team's sums said there was over a litre of fuel left in the car, but they could only get 300 millilitres out. But then they were, so the FIA said, no, that's not a sample, we can't use it, you're disqualified. But they said, no, the fuel is there, it's just inside the car.
Yeah, and so I understand it. I think they actually had a sensor failure, I believe. And or there was also a fuel pickup problem with the pump. So yeah, when and I've done this before on F3 cars, when you provide your fuel sample, obviously you have to have a certain amount of fuel in the tank, and once it you plug in your pump, your external pump, and that will either suck fuel out of the tank, or you will have to use the car's on system or proprietary system pump to get it out. So yeah, depending on the exact details, depends. But yeah, I think they also had a pump issue, which meant that the car overconsumed, but they weren't registering that it was overconsuming. So yeah, unfortunately, with this type of regulation, where it's not necessarily a direct racing incident, where it's all quite, you know, human factors at play and interpretation, because it is a hard and fast number, it is either yes or no, isn't it? So for me, they were never going to escape it. After they got their appeal thrown out, then
yeah, it was pretty kind of stonewall, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But you could argue that 700 millilitres is not going to make any difference. It will, but how the magnitude of that is debatable. So yeah, I don't think it would have really made any difference to the result.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
And this is where Dan's just like, I knew I should never have been on the podcast with Ped. Because I just sit here coming up with all these tech questions. Why do they start with 100? Is it 150 kilos?
I think it's 110 now, isn't it?
110, okay. At the beginning, like,
they won't always start at that.
But Brundle will always be like, these cars are loaded with 110 kilos of fuel, and you always measure it in kilos because it expands. Yeah. Da, da, da.
Yeah.
So if they measure it in kilos at the start of the race, why are they taking it out in litres at the end?
That's a very good question, actually.
Why is the regs that it's kilos when we do it here, but when we measure, we need a certain amount? Because again, like the volatility of fuel, it will change depending on temperature, etc. Like, I think, tell me if I'm wrong, physics and chemists and chemiphysists, if that's a word. Anyone have an answer for me on that?
I don't actually know why they specify. Well, the teams naturally specify fuel in kilos, and that's because it's, you know, you're not subject to temperature changes then. Because if you take fuel out of the car once it's been around, It'll probably be sitting at, let's say, 30 degrees, I think, is normally what comes out of the F3 cars in the fuel system. But when you put it in, it could potentially be colder than that, depending on the ambient conditions. Mm. So, yeah, obviously your volume will change depending on temperature, as liquids do. But in terms of energy density, I think is why they specify it in kilos, because then, you know, you have a certain amount of energy to get you through the race, similar to how we do in Formula E. But, yeah, good question. I don't actually know the answer to that, I'm afraid.
I thought you were working it out. I thought you were about to be like, and the reveal is, and that you sort of figured it out as we were talking. That would have been awesome. But
no, that's disappointing. I don't really know the answer. I'm sure there's a very, very valid reason for it.
Well, if anyone out there listening does know the answer, or wants to just incessantly tweet someone in tech in Formula One, then, you know, please just bombard them on our behalf. No, don't do that. Don't do that. But, you know, if there is anyone out there that knows the answer to that, that'd be great. Well, maybe we should find, like, some kind of chemist or something, or some intelligent person from a university or something. Or there'd have to be someone familiar with the F1 regs, though, wouldn't it? Probably just move on from this any time, Rich, or I'm just going to keep talking.
Well, you say to, for people to find out. Well, if you do find out or know why, let us know. Many ways to get in touch with us, as usual. Patreon.com/NRF1. You can find usually the full edition of this podcast, but because this is a mid-season review, it's all a bit different this week. But usually you get the full edition podcast there. For social media, which are the big ones, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, the handle for all three of these is at @thenrf1. And you can email us as well. The address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com.
Hello, everyone. This is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Okay, there's one other big thing we need to mention, guys, and it's a good job that you're here as well, I think, Dan, because Williams have points.
Yeah, about bloody time. It's been a long time in the making, hasn't it? And they very nearly cocked it up as well. But yeah, thankfully it came good this time. They actually had the pace.
Double points finish as well.
Yeah, on a track over the last few years, traditionally, well, I guess with the exception of last year, hasn't really done them many favours. What with it being quite a high downforce track, but yeah, they did a remarkable job. Very, very pleased for them, especially considering our George managed to get himself in the points for once. And bless him, he was very emotional after the race. I did have to feel for him. Yeah, they did very well, and it was a long time in the making.
Yeah, and who would have thought that after all this time, the driver that would get the most points in the team would be Latifi?
Well, I mean, there have been a lot of rumours recently that he's going to be ousted in favour of someone else.
It's
either one of the Mercedes FE drivers.
Yeah, that's it's coming up. We've got the teaser coming up.
Yeah, so, you know, he's put in a performance at a time where it was actually quite critical, especially before summer break. Where, yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised. A lot of the teams are talking about next season. This is traditionally when silly season starts. So yeah, good timing, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Awesome. So I think we might as well do it now, because we always praise George, because obviously this is a Norfolk podcast, and George, as we all know, famously is from Norfolk.
I don't think we've ever mentioned it before, but good stuff.
Yeah, probably not. So let's go through, because he could be a contender, I feel, here. Usually we do our of the weekend awards, but these are different. These are just of the prediction awards. So it's what we're basically going to do at the end of the year, we do the of the season awards, and we go through, as we're midway through, Ped had the brilliant idea of basically, let's predict who we think will be the of the season winner and see if we're correct.
But I think I've probably stolen this idea off of multiple other sports shows, but I'll take the credit.
It was all your idea.
It's all my idea.
That's fine.
It's all my idea.
As was Formula One.
In general, yeah.
So the first award is the Rodolfo Gonzalez driver. Who do you think will be driver of the year?
I love this, you see. Who will be the driver of the year?
Now, I normally like to, and we've done this in the past, I normally like to ignore, let's say, the top four, because traditionally it's one of Mercedes and or Ferrari and Red Bull. So I would probably say Pierre Gasly.
Good shout.
Oh, see, I think I'm going to go top four. Ooh. And I haven't looked at the standings, so I might be wrong here, and you might say it's not top four, but I think it's Lando Norris.
Hmm.
He's sitting in the top four at the moment, isn't he?
Top four, couldn't it? Yeah.
So he's currently top four at the moment, and I think he will finish higher than anyone expected, and I think he will have some more front rows and more podiums this year. So I think by the end of the year, I think I'll be giving my Driver of the Year award to Lando Norris.
I absolutely love that shout.
No, that's a really good shout, actually.
Yeah, I love that one. Nice.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Well, all right, the next one is the Team Lotus
Rich,
team.
Rich, have you done yours?
I haven't done mine. Oh, no, okay.
Don't you try and get away with
stuff. All right, let's go with an outfield one. Because of some news that I read, I'm going to say Charles Leclerc.
Oh, hello.
Ooh.
He's driven well for Ferrari. He's had a pole position which he didn't get to start from in Monaco. He's led a couple of races. Did he finish on the podium earlier this season? I feel like he did, but I could be wrong.
Cool. I'm not the right person to ask for that.
Well, he was leading at Silverstone, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was?
Yeah, so he must have been on the podium there.
Yeah, he certainly was.
Yeah, so he's driven well. You know, okay, he's in the Ferrari, but there's... Yeah, I'm going to go for him.
I think that's a good shout, because I reckon Ferrari could have a really strong back half of the season.
Mm.
No, they could do, especially with this engine upgrade.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll get into that in a little while. Okay, a bit more. But,
sorry, jump the gun.
But the Team Lotus team of the weekend, or not of the weekend, of potentially of the season.
Ooh,
well, in fact, I'm going to go down Ped's line here. I'm going to have to go with McLaren.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You know,
I think that I'm actually going to go with a team you mentioned earlier, Dan, and I'm going to say, and there's a reason I won't be saying McLaren, and I'll come on to that in a minute, but I'm going to say I think it might be AlphaTauri.
Good
considering
job.
Where they've been, how well Gasly's driving for them, and how impressive Tsunoda was in Hungary. But also, I think he's, now that he's settling more into that team, I think he'll have a lot more to give. And we know they're rocket fast. And yeah, I think second half of the season, I think I could very easily find myself here at the end of the season saying outside shot for team of the season that isn't one of the, you know, the big main contenders. I think I might be comfortable saying AlphaTauri.
No, that's a good point, actually, because it would be really interesting to see whether they can overcome the points deficit that they've now got to Alpine. As to whether they can get P6, I think it is, P5 in the championship. Because obviously, with Alpine, with Ocon winning and Alonso getting fourth, I think it was in the end.
Yeah, yeah.
Or in fact, it was promoted to third, wasn't it? Fourth on the road. So they had a really good points haul in Hungary, didn't they? So it'd be interesting to see whether AlphaTauri can overcome that.
I'm with you, but I don't know that Alpine finishing ahead of AlphaTauri would be enough for me to say that Alpine were overall the better team of the year. I know it's a really weird thing to say, but I just think...
There's a bit of nuance in there, isn't
it? There is, isn't there? And for just in case anyone hasn't looked it up, I have Charles Leclerc second in at Silverstone.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's had a good season.
Not bad, yeah.
Nice.
Rich, are you giving us a team?
I agreed with McLaren, but then when you said actually you've got a reason, I did think Daniel Ricciardo's been a bit mixed. So, potentially not got the most out of the car. So now I'm doubting myself. But I think he's going to have a strong second half. So I'll go with McLaren.
Okay, all right.
Just to save me trying to think. But yeah, the next award, the Pastor Maldonado.
Now, this I think.
No, I know who it's going to be.
Is, well, this is too obvious to go Nikita Mazepin.
I normally call him he who should not be named.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dad. Apologies.
Part of the joke with that is because obviously with the Russian anti-doping scandal, so he can't actually race under his own flag, despite the fact he is actually racing under his own flag, just really discreetly.
Yeah, is he a Russian Formula One committee? Because that's what they were in the Olympics, weren't they? They were the Russian Olympic Committee. So is he the Russian F1 committee driver? Nikita Mazepin. But so he should not be named. It won't be him, because that's obviously too blunt force trauma. This is the reason I'm not giving McLaren the team of the weekend, because I think my top two contenders here could be pretty high profile. Could be Daniel Ricciardo. Sorry. Daniel Ricciardo. Or it could be Perez. Because these are two people that have made moves. Now, okay, Perez was sort of forced on him a bit more than anything. Daniel Ricciardo's got to be pig sick, because he left to go to McLaren. Lando's driving the wheels off of it. He's having a dog of a year, and he's just had to sit and watch the team that he left win a race. I know not in the car that he left. I know Ocon was his teammate, but he's got to be sitting there thinking in his head, I can beat Esteban. So that's pretty frustrating. So I just think he's had an absolute dog of a season so far in a car that you know that can perform. And I just think it's a pretty long fall from grace that, what, 2 years ago, he was the face that they plastered all over the Netflix series and everything like that. And I just, this year was like, he's gone to McLaren, new start, really exciting. And he's just been an absolute damp squib.
Yeah, he's made a bit of an arse of it, hasn't he? I mean, so there you go. Kind of have sort of seen it before from him. When he first joined Renault, he struggled. I think Hülkenberg outperformed him in the first half of the season.
But he at least had the excuse that it wasn't really the best car. Whereas McLaren's car at the moment, when you see what Lando's doing with it, is ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I mean, I've heard that he's struggling with the brakes, and that is kind of historically his weak point.
Just got to hit a pedal, mate. Just hit a pedal.
Yeah.
How hard is it?
But it's also what with all of the brake-by-wire system, there's a lot more nuance to it.
There is. I was just being daft. I'm sorry. It's not as simple as hitting a pedal.
Well, I mean, if you go back far enough, there are three pedals.
Oh geez, yeah.
In the 98 McLaren, I think it was, when they had the extra brake pedal.
Yeah.
Photographer snapped.
Oh man, I remember that. But yeah, any other shouts from Maldonado? Were you saying the Maz, Dan?
Well, yeah, I was going to say that, and then because I don't want to go too blunt and disappoint Ped.
You never disappoint me, Dan.
I'm going to actually go for Bottas, because he quite has, well, he literally in Hungary made a boat arse of it, didn't he?
So, yeah, it's actually a great shout.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go for Bottas, yeah.
Yeah, you know what, I'm just for ease, I'm going to agree with that, because I can't think of any others to shout. And in the final one, Giuliano Salvi, the moment of the year. Now, obviously, we've got half a season to choose from. So the second half we know is going to be super exciting. So we know that there's going to be another highlight come up. But at the minute, you know, or a moment, I should say, at the minute, what nominations do you guys have?
Well, crystal balls aside, I think obviously Cop's corner incident is going to be up there. Whether it's topped by any dramatic title fight that we have potentially in Abu Dhabi, or if anything else really spills over in quite the same degree, yeah, I think for me that will probably stay top, but obviously it depends on what happens in the next few races. Whether there are any other contenders, I really don't know.
Be in reverse order.
So say that again, Pedro. You had a little glitch moment for a second then, and you it lagged out on us.
I've got three. Oh no, gutted. I've got three, and I'll do them in reverse order.
Go for it.
Number one. I'm pretty sure, and again, I don't research any of this. This is all off the top of my head, so please tell me if I'm wrong. Number one was Lando getting on the first row of the grid.
Mm-hmm.
That was really exciting. Really enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah, when he nearly got pole, didn't he? Yeah.
So close. Like that, I haven't been out of my seat for something like that in a very long time. And then number two, in terms of moment of the weekend, we're talking moment of the first half of the season, could be moment of the season, I still can't get that image of just Hamilton being the only car on the grid for the restart out of my head. Like, that was remarkable, just because it was unique. Okay, I hadn't seen anything like it, and I don't think I'll see anything like it again. But for me at the moment, to the thing that you cannot beat, the feel good feeling of that double Williams points finish. And that for me, I think, was such a good moment. And as you said, Dan, like, George was quite emotional afterwards. You could tell what it meant to everyone at the team and what have you. So for me, watching it and just like having willed it for so long and so often, having willed it and seen George running in 10th or 9th, and then there's an incident or the car has to be retired or something like that. Just, it always seems like it's been so close, but he's always driven the wheels off of it.
Mm.
And then to actually have it come good was pretty special, I think.
And for me, what relates to that is the unselfishness that he had at the start of the race to say, sacrifice me, look after Nicky, let's get some points. To say, pit me early if you want
points,
to.
Podium potential, that's what he was looking at, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that early on.
Yeah,
so.
I agree. Yeah, it was pretty special.
Yeah.
It was. I'll tell you what it reminded me of. It reminded me of, and you'll love this, Rich, it reminded me of Damon Hill getting points in the Arrows.
Oh, man.
Silverstone. Was that Silverstone, wasn't it?
No, that was Hungary.
Hungary.
I think,
when he nearly won.
Yeah, he was leading. He showed Schumacher how to overtake.
Yeah.
Into turn one.
Rich, you savage. You're stone cold.
but he did. The old turn one as well, which wasn't as much of a corner. It, you know, he got him there, showed him, and just pulled away from him in an Arrows.
Yeah,
he was leading the race.
I remember that moment, and I remember him just driving around afterwards with the point, like waving to the crowd and stuff. Like, it was pretty special for like him to get that point for that team and what it meant.
Yeah,
I got real vibes of that from this drive, from George and from Nicky.
He was in tears as well, Damon, because it could have been so much better, because he was like three laps from winning or something, and he was like, it was knocking on like a, it was a long way in the lead, I want to say like a minute in the lead, but that could be wrong, but yeah, he was like three laps away from winning and ended up second, and like you say, it's just those points in that car, right.
Yeah, probably the most recent example of something like this is when Gilles Bianchi scored those couple of points in Monaco.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Cool. That was a classic one.
See, it's pretty special. So when you have that moment of a team that's been, especially for us, like, as we're all, I mean, obviously Dan has a slightly different vested interest than we do, but we all talk quite fondly on this podcast about Williams. Like, you know, we'll disagree over whether we like Hamilton or whether we like Vettel or people like that, or historically whether or not we like Schumacher. But I don't think there's anyone on this podcast that's like, no, I always hated Williams. Do you get what I mean? I think we all have a bit of a special place for it. So to see them earn something after such a long time of languishing has been great. I'm going to call it Dan's legacy. So to see Dan's legacy come to fruition, I think we've all enjoyed that.
Yeah,
so
fantastic.
I hope there is a moment in the second half of the season that beats that for me. But if there isn't, I will not be complaining. I think I've got my money's worth of emotion out of that.
That's fantastic. Well, that's those award prediction things wrapped up. I don't know what to call them. It was a bit last minute, but it's fine. So we'll crack on and go through the news quickly. So as Dan teased, Ferrari have said they have a new and significant engine upgrade. They said that it's not sure when it's going to come in, but they think it's going to be expected for Monza. So that's not too far away. So there's still a good chunk of the season left after that. So with an engine upgrade, they could be further forward. We'll see. The other one, I think we also mentioned as well, Aston Martin have dropped the appeal over the Vettel disqualification. So that's all done with, and the points have been confirmed. And the big Formula E teaser that we promised right at the beginning, Nyck de Vries, who is linked, I believe, with replacing George Russell if he should go to Mercedes. Nyck de Vries has been linked with Williams and taking that place. But he's also, as Dan said, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the result, look away now. But he won the Formula E Championship.
And in doing so, he became the first Dutch F1 or Dutch World Motorsport Champion, beating Max Verstappen. So Verstappen fans will not be happy about that.
Oh, wow.
Because obviously he is the golden child.
Wow. And wasn't there something, I'm sure for a while, George Russell was dating Nyck de Vries' sister?
Yeah, he was. I don't know if he is now.
Okay.
But yeah, he was involved with his sister. I don't know if they are now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not sure.
I don't know. But I think that's the news. Is there anything else you guys know, big news that we need to mention?
I didn't even know that, to be honest. Nope. So.
Right, we've got something a little different we're going to do now. Just for fun, as we kind of close in towards the end of this podcast. Formula One have released their summer break quiz. So the 2021 quiz, we thought we'd do it live on, well, it's not live because it's recording, but you know what I mean. But we're going to do it live on the podcast recording. So
so we're clear here, we're not going to like read the question and then pause the recording and like make it sound like we know the answers and get everything right. Like, we are this is no skips, we are doing this straight through. Rich, you're going to be question master, yeah?
Sure.
Cool. And I just think between us, Dan, I don't want this to be a competition because I know I'd lose. So that's why I don't want it to be a competition. But I think between us, we'll see if we can come up with the answers. But I think we can spend forever, you know, figuring out what it, I think. Because did you say they're multiple choice, Rich?
Yeah, 26 questions. It looks like multiple choice right now from the first one that's on my screen.
Okay.
Haven't gone through them yet, so we don't know what the questions are.
All right.
But the first
we'll
one.
We'll try and answer them as quick as we can. Quick, rapid fire answers.
Rapid fire. So, which of these drivers completed the highest mileage in 2021 pre-season testing at Bahrain? Raikkonen, Hamilton, Verstappen, or Gasly?
I would say Gasly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Gasly. Let's go for Gasly. Correct.
Yay!
Nailed it.
Fantastic.
Absolutely smashed that. Do you know what? I'll probably retire undefeated.
Question two. Lewis Hamilton won the opening race of the year, the Bahrain Grand Prix, but when was the last time he won the opening race of the season? 2008, 13, 15 or 17?
It's 15.
15?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is 15 because they made a big song and dance about it.
I absolutely bow to your knowledge on that, Dan. So let's go for it.
Correct. 15.
Yeah.
Smashed it.
I made a massive song and dance over that. I remember that very clearly.
Question 3. With Hamilton's victory over Verstappen in Bahrain, Mercedes extended their championship leading streak. When did this latest leading streak begin? Abu Dhabi 2016, Germany 2018, Turkey 2020 or Britain 2019? Ooh.
I don't have a clue.
So when was the last
time, Rich?
So Abu Dhabi 2016, Germany 2018, Turkey 2020 and Britain 2019. So the last time another team led the championship. So
I mean, I'm almost tempted to go all the way back to 16 because they've been dominant for a good 5-6 years, haven't they?
So 2017 was...
Did Ferrari at any point lose the championship?
I don't think so.
I don't know about
constructors.
Was probably the closest they would have gotten, and I don't think they did it then.
19 or 18? Wait, Germany 2018, Hamilton won the race because Vettel retired. That was when he put it in the wall, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Should we go with that?
Yeah, that would seem probably most logical.
That suddenly come back and I feel like there was something said about that, that was the big turning point. I'm clicking it.
On them, hit it.
Correct! Yes, boys!
Oh, good work. Only 23 more to go. Enthralled.
Imola hosted the second round of the 2021 season with Max Verstappen the winner. With P1, he took Red Bull's best result at Imola. Which driver held Red Bull's best result at Imola before Verstappen? Weber, Coulthard, Liuzzi or Buemi?
Oh, it wasn't Buemi because last time I think they raced at Imola was 2006. So DC was racing for them then, and also Christian Kleen and Liuzzi.
Should we go DC then?
You could probably have a pun.
DC or Weber. Yeah, because they didn't race during the prime Red Bull years, so.
No.
No, it'd have to be DC then, wouldn't it?
Ah, no, it was Liuzzi.
Was it?
Yeah. Red Bull's best previous result at Imola was Liuzzi's 8th place in 2005. Ooh. Wow.
Go on, Antonio.
We had to get one wrong. Number 44 driver Lewis Hamilton left Imola with 44 points, but what was his championship lead? 4, 3, 2 or 1?
I think 1.
Pretty close,
wasn't
it? Yeah, we'll go for 1 then.
Go for 1. Correct.
Pretty sure it's just close.
Yeah, it was 1 point. Correct, smashed it. Okay, the Portugal podium consisted of Hamilton, Verstappen and Bottas. The trio becoming the most frequent to grace the top three in Formula 1, but which is the most frequent pair of podium finishes in F1 history? Hamilton and Rosberg, Hamilton and Bottas, Barrichello, Schumacher, Hamilton and Vettel, Prost and Senna. In F1 history.
I feel that Barrichello, Schumacher one is probably a good shout as well, though. But yeah, Hamilton... Vettel, when you look at how long they've been going and how long they've been successful,
and how long the seasons
as well, weren't there? Yeah, more races in the season. I think that's a great shout, Dan.
It's a great shout. It's correct.
Hey,
I nailed it.
I have to say, it's just got shades of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
Okay. For £7.
You know what we should actually do? We should get Callum on here, and he should be the chaser. I reckon he'd get all of these right.
Oh my gosh. Question 7. Fernando Alonso scored P8 in Portugal this season for his best result since Singapore 2018. But how did he fare at the start of the 2021 Portuguese Grand Prix? Gained 5 places, gained 2, lost 2 or lost 5?
Difficult one because it doesn't really stick out in the mind as anything significant.
So there
I want to say he lost 5.
I'm not sure. Because I remember there was Latifi who had a collision with Mazepin, and several other drivers ran wide, didn't they? Because it was all rainy.
Yeah, and then wasn't there the safety car where Raikkonen decided he wasn't going to look where he was going?
But he might have lost because he might have ran wide.
I've just realised I don't think I watched this race. So that's why none of this is sounding familiar to me, so don't listen to me at all.
Yeah, I don't know.
What do you think?
Just take a random punt, you've got 25% chance.
I said gained two, but you lost two. So you were closer, Ped.
I'll take
Should
it.
Oh my gosh.
Old British pessimism.
It's gone from having four answers to having six suddenly. So Hamilton converted pole number 100 to victory in Spain, making this his best start to a season after four races since 2013, 2020, ever, 2008, 2019 or 2018. Has he had a better start to a season?
Yep.
He won in Bahrain, didn't he? Second round was Imola, which he
was second.
Second, yeah. Then Portugal, where he must have won. Yeah, he did actually win, didn't he? Because Bottas struggled on prime tyre. Then was Spain round four?
Maybe.
Yeah, it must have been, because they went across the Iberian Peninsula, didn't they? So, then he won in Spain. So this must have been his best ever start.
Can I just say, I don't know anyone else that would work out the logical answer to a question in Formula 1 by going, yes, of course, because he went across the Iberian Peninsula.
Well, the logic worked, because that was the correct answer ever.
Correct. Wow. What question are we on, Rich? Because I say if they're getting more answers, we go to 10, and then we let the listeners do the rest themselves.
We're on question 9, so, and
okay,
it's gone back down to 4. So,
all right, I keep talking.
Who led the most laps in Spain? Bottas, Hamilton, Leclerc, Verstappen. I'm sure Spain was Verstappen, right?
Verstappen, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was it. Verstappen. Charles Leclerc took pole position in Monaco but didn't start the race thanks to damage sustained from his qualifying crash. How many other drivers have qualified on pole but failed to start in F1? 1, 2, 3 or 4?
Oh, yeah, God knows. Must be a small number, obviously.
Qualified on pole but failed to start.
Well, we had Schumacher in 2012 when he got his penalty from deciding that he wanted to have a crash with Bruno Senna.
Oh, yeah.
So that's already two, isn't it? Whether they're...
Oh, but do they mean on, as in failed to start the race?
Oh, yeah, that's a bit of...
Not just failed to start on pole, but failed to start the race.
Yeah, I think so. There must have been a couple, because was there an old Williams that did and then they were disqualified? Or it might have been Tyrrell or something. They were disqualified afterwards because of their car didn't meet regulations, so they're... I'm thinking of like the six-wheeled.
I like to think there's people screaming at their radios and headphones right now, telling us the answer, that they know it 100%, and like we're just here like dicking around.
We could always. Oh, I don't know how that would work.
Go two. Let's just say two.
Two. Oh, it's four.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well,
yeah, never would
tell you
that.
Who.
Jean-Pierre Jabouet,
I should imagine it probably is.
Yep, that's him. I don't know how to pronounce it, whether the J was an H or an X or what. So I apologise. 1975, Didier Pironi, Germany 1982, Schumacher, France 96, Trulli, Indianapolis 2005.
Oh, that's because of the tyres.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I can imagine a few people were shouting 2005 at their Aleppo or their headphones or their Hiri.
Yeah, I feel a bit thick now. Yeah. Bottas retired from second place after a botched pit stop in Monaco. while Max Verstappen won the race, how long did it take to remove Bottas's stuck front right wheel? 33 hours, 127 hours, 23 hours, 43 hours.
It was a day and a half, was roughly, wasn't it? So it must have been 34.
33 or 43, so it must be 43, right?
Yeah.
Or did they have to, no, they had to fly it back, didn't they?
To just remove it, I'm with Dan. I think day and a half, 30 odd.
Yeah, it would have been the Monday after, wouldn't it?
So 33 or 43, what do you want to say?
33.
It was 43.
Oh, don't ever listen to me on a podcast team, Rich.
Hey,
I'm only ever good for winning the snowball jackpot. Oh, now he says it.
Well,
yeah, 43 hours. That is how long it takes to cross the Iberian Peninsula. Now we know.
Well, no, if you've ever driven from the south of France.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Oh, brilliant. Come on then, Rich. What else you got?
Which two drivers crashed separately at the end of qualifying in Azerbaijan, securing Charles Leclerc's second consecutive pole position? So one was Sainz, and was the other one Tsunoda?
Yes, yeah, it must have been. Yeah, because he went.
Is this multiple choice as well?
Three, didn't he?
No way! It can't have been Tsunoda. Yeah, actually, yeah, it could. Yeah.
Did he get to Q3?
Yeah, it might have been Q3. The other option is Tsunoda, Mazepin, Russell, Leclerc, Sainz, and Latifi. But Leclerc was on pole, so he didn't crash. Sainz crashed.
Mm. No, but
I feel like Tsunoda.
Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I feel like it was Tsunoda because.
Yeah, go on. You feel like it was Tsunoda. Go on, hit it.
Yeah, Tsunoda and Sainz. Yeah.
We debated over that for far too long, if you were there. I'm not having another 43 hours on my head.
So Perez won the Azerbaijan Grand Prix ahead of Vettel, with a four-time champion taking a podium for Aston Martin, six races in the brand of one. Was P2 at Baku better, equal to, or worse than Aston Martin's best result from 59 to 60? Better, equal, or worse?
Yeah, my knowledge of 1959 and 1960 is rather patchy. So, I don't know. I'd probably guess better.
I'd say better, because if they were a force, surely they would have lasted more than two seasons.
And you two are 100% correct, better.
Nice.
Verstappen took victory in France to stretch Hamilton's winless streak to three races. When was the last time Hamilton went without a win for three races? 8, 9, 16 or 19? Potentially 9, because he didn't win until Hungary that year, so. But then did he 16, he had a good car, did he not win for the first few? Was it Rosberg?
I almost want to say 19.
19? Could be. Ferrari were pretty swift then.
Because, yeah, and also bear in mind, you know, Bottas, wasn't that like when they were making a big deal about he's different, he's got a beard now or something like that?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah, Bottas 2.0.
Bottas 2.0, and all it needed was, you know, a Bottas win, a Hamilton retirement, and a Bottas second. I think we're almost deifying Lewis to be like, oh, my God, he never loses three. Like, I think he probably has had a run of where he hasn't won three races quite, you know, like that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I can get behind 19, yeah.
Let's go for 19. It was correct. Smashed it, Ped. Smashed it.
Mate, I'm telling
you. Well, of course, he went across the Iberian Peninsula, you see, so...
That's the Hamilton hive mind. That's what we're doing there.
Oh, my gosh.
Everyone with the surname Hamilton can do it.
Okay, question 15 out of 26. Do you want to carry on, or do you want to pause it there and save it for another one?
Oh, when are we going to do our next one?
Probably after Belgium, so that'd be 2 weeks' time.
2 weeks' time. Yeah, go on. Let's do part two later. Let's give the listener. Let's give the listener something to, you know, put their teeth into and get them on the hook.
No problem. So it's added to my what do you call it? My
list.
Bookmarks. That's the one. Touch. Jeez. I'm sorry, my brain is really not working today. I think
Do you know what we've currently scored? Where are we on that?
I think we only got like 3 wrong, didn't we?
Yeah. Pretty strong, wasn't
it? So we're currently got like 12 out of 15. Oh, this is question 15, so we've got 11 maybe.
So, something like that. I think we're doing all right.
We're doing all right. It's not bad. It's not bad. Awesome. Well, I think I've added that to my bookmark, so we can make sure we do that next time. I think that's everything else wrapped up, apart from saying that we're going to Belgium next, which should be a cracker.
Oh, looking forward to it. Always am.
Yeah, it's always one of the... well, I don't know if it is always considered one of the crown jewel events, but I certainly consider it one of the crown jewel traditional events. It has enough normally where it can provide a bit of intrigue, and then, like you mentioned earlier on, Rich, turn one can and more often than not does provide a small accident or two.
Yeah.
2012 excluding.
And it continues, doesn't it? You have turn one, then you've got the run through a rouge, which is really close. Then you've got the whacking long straight down into the chicane. That whole first sector of the track is just overtaking galore, isn't it?
Just lends itself to carnage.
Before you even throw in that it can rain on one part of the track and it's sunny on the other.
Oh yeah. And around the back, going through Blanchimont and into the bus stop and all that, is you can even overtake there. You got such a run. It's
Well, yeah. Verstappen decided he was going to go outside of Blanchimont in 2015. And we've had all sorts of drama at the bus stop over the years, haven't we? Thinking of Vettel taking out Button in 2010.
Oh my gosh, I remember that. Yeah.
And we've also had all sorts of memorable races, thinking of Damon Hill in the Jordan.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to mention Damon again.
What a fever dream this has been for Rich Baxter.
Damon twice in the same podcast.
Doing good stuff as well.
Yeah.
Good stuff, later years Damon.
All his great wins.
Yeah, no, Spa definitely doesn't disappoint. I can't really think of many dull, I was going to say dry, which is also relatively infrequent races at Spa. Yeah, and especially
because even if the race is actually boring, they still look gorgeous going around that track.
Mm.
So it's still engaging visually. Do you see what I mean? Like just the way they sweep up and through Eau Rouge and stuff like that, even if no one's overtaking, that's still really pleasurable to watch.
Mm. No, it's definitely a beautiful bit of the world. I've been there a couple of times, and if the restrictions allow, then certainly would encourage people to try and get there this year, if not next year. Yeah, it's and if you can walk around the track as well, highly recommend that. I've done it a few times.
I love a little Dan Springall flex.
Well, there are
a couple of times walked the track, no big deal.
Tracks I've been to, despite having worked with racing cars for a few years, I've mostly stayed in.
You now know why he says he believes Spa to be a crown jewel. He's just like, oh, it's crown jewel. Probably the most important race. If you're ever going to go to one. Like, that's probably the only one you should really go. Did I mention I've been?
Well, I mean,
love it.
From the UK point of view, I don't know if our overseas listeners also share the holiday, but obviously in the UK we have the August bank holiday.
Yeah, of course.
Or bank holiday weekend. So, traditionally that's when people tend to go. If they miss out on tickets for Silverstone, funnily enough, Spa actually often, even with all the travel, works out to be cheaper than trying to get a grandstand to Beckett's, for example. So it's normally quite a popular one for British fans. So I would highly recommend it. Yeah, it is reasonably easy to get to. If you're coming from East Anglia, you probably go on the ferry from Harwich, or you go on the Channel Tunnel elsewhere. It's quite easy to get to.
Sounds like we've got an NRF1 podcast field trip coming next year.
Was literally about to say we need to get Dan organised in that, because he sounds like he knows what he's talking about.
Sounds awesome.
Rich, are we all going to drive? Rich, are you going to take the Stang?
Mate, I'd love to.
You take the Stang. I'll take the wife's TTS.
Mate, we'll do it.
Steve will get his Porsche.
Yeah.
Has he still got the Porsche?
Yeah, he's got a Porsche. Yeah, another one, 911.
What's DT driving now?
Oh, I've no idea. His Lotus was on the back of a trailer thing the other day. I saw. So
heartbreaking. But yeah, right, we'll do that. We'll round up the NRF1 cars and we'll get ourselves over to spot. We should do it, shouldn't we?
We should. That'd be awesome. Well, Dan and Ped, thanks so much for joining me. It's been a long one. It's been good, and it's been an in-depth review of the season so far. We will return with E284, which will be our Belgium GP review, and I really look forward to it. Thanks again, guys, for joining me. It's been good fun.
No, thank you.
Oh, mate,
thank you
for hosting. It's been awesome. Thanks for hosting and doing a wonderful job as you always do, Dan. It's been good to catch up and have you on the same in the same room. So maybe not 2.5 years till the next one. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. likewise. It's been a long 2.5 years since getting to hear your dulcet tones.
Dulcet momentum. Looking forward to the rest of the season, guys. It's
absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. This has been the NRF1 podcast. We'll see you next time. Until then, goodbye.